In time before tomorrow, all educators should be aware of this new world. From David Porter, Chief Executive of BC Campus, who attended most of the meeting, you know, I can feel the buzz in the room that he can, you know, get the genie out of the bottle. Can't help but wonder if this meeting is similar to a meeting that drafts the constitution of a new country. And a comment, of course, from one of our participants in the room. There are vibrant planning meetings. I mean, there was really a positive sense and a positive energy happening, folk following. A very interesting point raised by Kim Tucker, who is a free and open source software user, who was actually unable to follow the live view stream because of a closed proprietary codec, a client that is used to feed the stream. So the point being is, when we're thinking about providing access to our learners, we must at least try to make sure that all learners can access whatever we're doing with the technologies of their choice. So it's a point we need to think about and keep in mind. And so, you know, I really love this, Jim. You know, I wish Jim Tate was on Twitter. I want to connect with him. That this was, you know, during your presentation. Rory, they really like your notion of let's not get stuck in there. So this is good. And so, just to get a sense of what was happening out there. So what I'm going to do now is I'm going to hand over to Jim, who's going to walk us through a couple of suggestions of how we might structure ourselves for planning the smaller steps in realizing our bigger vision.
Thanks, Wayne. With the overview of proposals for action on the prototype, the single page handout that I passed around at the end of yesterday, it's really to try and get people working on things that are of interest to them, where they feel they can make the best contribution. And there are 8 sort of subsets of proposals there, some of them more naturally hang together. We had originally planned that there would be 3 groups, but as the numbers grew, we think we may be able to manage 4 groups. One other principle before we decide what we're interested in, I mean, personal interest and interest of your institution in terms of contribution is obviously a key principle. But where an institution operated, so for example, David and I won't be in the same group, but we know how we think and work together for a while. The other principle that I'd like to suggest is that in my experience, I've found that the further the institutions are apart, the better the collaboration. There's a sort of productivity of distance, that it adds interest and variety of perspective. So I'd like to suggest that we've got a number of institutions from New Zealand. So rather than having a New Zealand group, for example, most of the New Zealand institutions in different groups. I won't apply totally, but there are a couple of principles about how we might get the most productive outcomes for the meeting. So what I'd like to get is an indication at this stage of who's interested in what, just so we get an idea roughly of what the numbers are like. Obviously the size of the groups don't have to be equal. So I'm referring to the prototype proposal for action and the 8 subsets. And I'll just work down the numbers, suggesting that point 1 and 2, where we decide on the initial courses to be offered for the prototype. And this idea that we have some peer review in that. So I suggested yesterday that we might have 3 partners, 3 or 4, working on an issue like that. And as well as helping decide and put a proposal up for the actual initial 2 or 3 courses, or however many we decide, would also be prepared to engage in time in a bit of peer review. So that we also look then at getting the guaranteed cross-credit aid advance. So that's at Chambers where we decide on the first two or three courses that might be offered. And then we look at a process of how they would be, in inverted commas, guaranteed cross-credit, or where they could credit into an institutional process using the existing procedures in the institution. So we try and get courses that will have as much cross-credit potential as possible. So that's one group. And as I've mentioned, this one, the people in the room who are interested in being involved in that as we break up, could I just have a show of hands? So we've got one, two, three, four. So that five. Okay, I think that's pretty good. So if you don't change your mind, I think five is a good number for that. We've got quite a reasonable distribution of people.
Three and four, right?
No, that's for one and two.
Oh, okay.
Right. Three is, again, a challenge in its own right, because we spent not too much time talking about that yesterday. So getting the volunteer tutors available, how we recruit them, how we train them, and what logistical guidelines we operate on. There's two or three sub-projects there. And interesting things that we do, I'd just like to mention, not e-moderating, which we're calling this, which is at the core of students. So they need to be, have sufficient expertise at a particular course or subject level. The University of Sydney now for some time has been running an e-mentoring. And I think there will be elements of e-mentoring and e-moderating and helping students get engaged. And they run that on a one-to-one basis. So the alumni, I did my master's at Sydney, so I was invited to participate in this. And they just link up any student with a mentor, and they just have this informal support mechanism. It's like the pastoral care support that used to happen on campuses to help first years, get integrated and so on.
So, Jim.
Yeah, Judy.
A question on that. So, this group is going to look at the whole notion of academic volunteers, but I assume it's also open to consider alternatives to that.
Sure. Okay. Yeah. The domain name for academic volunteers has been sort of managed, we've got that, but the actual model for why I meant reducing mentoring, but it's meant to parallel an on-campus experience, so you'd have an online tutor supporting a group of students. Exactly how we do that, it doesn't preclude peer-to-peer or any other format. So this is just a starting point, but it is trying to manage the tutorial support that you would typically get on campus in this environment. It's meant to parallel that in some way. At USQ, we've looked at senior students, our own staff, and our alumni as the starting point, based on what I mentioned yesterday was an honor system where we think we haven't got the resources to do a formal recruitment, but we trust people in our networks, and we can gradually expand our networks in that way. But that's just a starting point. Any of these ideas are open for elaboration or, new ideas. So, having said that, could I get an indication from the floor of people who might be interested in contributing to that? Okay. Again, we've got, if you remember who you are, that's really looking at three and four as a grouping, because I think the decisions on how we manage the tutorial support depends on the pedagogy and the scale of the students. I'm suggesting that when we do the prototype, we might have 100 students in each of the courses that we offer, maybe two or three. Now, that's not grand scale. It doesn't meet the Macintosh scale of things, but I think events are manageable. If Wade wants to run with 10,000 students in his course, that's fine. So we've got a group there, a group of four. The next issue in terms of open assessment is really the admin interface and so on. Now, a lot of that will be managed in a technical sense, and it'll depend on institutional process. But I think how we manage the assessment and what cost, how we manage the costing of that as a cost recovery service fee. And at USQ, we thought that we have that for assessment, but there'll inevitably be some administrative overhead to get this thing organized. So it was a service fee to enable the assessment, but not just pay for the assessment. And we have teams of markers in our large courses that we pay an hourly rate to do the marking according to guidelines. So there's money to cover that, but then there'll be an administrative interface cost that would be managed, you know, by a service fee. Now, getting that off the ground is also, you know, quite a challenge. And we need a group to start looking at that. So it's how do you get the assessment? The point I make there is that if we have 100 students who start off, say, only a percentage of those students will put their hand up and say, well, I feel comfortable to pay the fee to be assessed. And we don't know how many that will be. I mean, if we look at typical dropout rates or even, you know, what happens with this non-traditional new student, we'd be uncertain as to what it would be. But the key point is that they only pay money, or we give them a scholarship to do that, which was the other suggestion, that with the first trial we might somehow manage to award scholarships for all the initial students, so we had 100 in each course. So we'd cover the costs of that, and then we'd set a fee once we knew what it cost and so on. So again, there's an open-ended thing, Judith.
I think I'm kind of missing some of the connecting of the dots here from where we were yesterday and kind of the level of detail that we're getting to here. And I don't know if I'm the only one, but I assumed that we were talking about the assessment piece being done by the institutions, it being conducted in whatever way was deemed to be appropriate by the individual institutions and charged for, and the fee set by the institution that was doing the assessment. So maybe I'm misunderstanding what you're saying in terms of trying to come up with a process and a fee and a structure around that.
I think it's to manage that across institutions, you know, that we work as a partnership, so there will be that individual autonomy at the institutional level. And that will be different, but I think when people are looking at the project as a whole, then having some understanding of, you know, what that level is important.
Just that, because I think it's a very important point, Judith, and this is my understanding and reflection on this is for the design of the actual prototypes that we will run. So it's really about these initial, say, two or three courses that we put together as the prototype to operationalize it to inform the model. And yes, I'm in total agreement that the way assessment operates at the individual institutions is the institution's prerogative, and it's the institution's decision around this. But say for the prototypes, because the thing is, we're going to have the world looking at us with these prototype courses. Do we need to be laying sort of the ground rules for the prototype, not for the model? So for example, we might decide collectively that we want to do scholarships for the prototype, not for the model. What are the rules around, you know, kind of, not the rules, but how will we operate the scholarships in a way that will work within our individual institutions? If that makes sense.
Yeah, no, I guess maybe I'm not understanding the prototype and what you mean by the prototype. I guess my concern, here's my concern. My concern is, we started out talking about being very open and flexibility and access to learners, and we seem to be getting more rigid, defined, structured.
Yep.
And I know we need some. It can't happen without any structure, but...
My sense around this is that we need to keep the openness, because if we lose the openness, we lose the strength of the model.
Yeah.
But within the openness, how are we going to run the prototype in a way that's going to make sense for design in the future? Because conceivably, if we have 13 prototypes, it's going to be hard to scale that in a short time frame.
But if you... Would you not assume that, depending on how you run the prototype, that is going to set the structure and the process for the future? So however we're doing this prototype is very important.
Absolutely. And I think that's why, at this point, it's very important for us to set the ground rules until the pilot's going to work, knowing that this can have an impact on the future model. So it's really about collecting around the table and getting a first draft on the table of how we want the prototype to work.
And I don't see that as moving towards rigidity or structure in any way. It's just having a framework for action that accommodates pluralistic alternatives, but within a reasonable way that we understand and benefit from each other's experience. So I see that ultimately there'll be a whole variety of pedagogies and a variety of cost structures and processes and so on. But in the end, we've got to try and get a guideline for action where we can learn from each other's experience and also make it defensible in terms of people looking at a new model. You know, we want it to be scalable, sustainable, and so on. And if we're a partnership, I think we can benefit from working together on that. We can save resources and time, you know, if we share our perspectives and get some sort of agreement. But in the end, I think there'll be a wide variety of actual experiences for students available.
And looking at it from the other way, it's really, what are the minimum requirements in terms of this openness in order for it to work for all institutions?
Mm-hmm.
See, because if we don't talk and get the concerns and the issues on the table in terms of what will work in my organization, it's going to be hard to design something that's going to work for all, if you see what I'm saying.
I'm
okay.
Happy to move on.
Yeah. No, but I'm very pleased that you're tabling them, because this is the real nitty-gritty and the important stuff, and we've got to get it right, because if we don't get that right, you know, we're not going to succeed.
So I'd like an indication from the floor if anybody would like to sort of reflect on how we get over an assessment moving and the issues, you know, related to that debate. How we would collect activity-based costing, just get some indicative hint there so that we can move towards the idea of what a cost recovery fee might look like, and that will feed into the open business model.
Yeah. I think we just got the costing campaign for each institution as to what cost to attribute.
Yeah, and I don't think it's putting the numbers to the actual number to the cost, but in the heart. What principles will we use to inform our institutions on how to cost this as recommendations that institutions can consider? But institutions have total autonomy in terms of the actual pricing structures they would want to use, because our costing structures are all different. But what principles would we use to help inform the partnership?
The other thing there is also the style of assessment that you do and how you're going to do it. Know, whether it's project-based, whether you have online examinations, or whether you have portfolio assessment, all of that will inform, you know, this space in terms of what's feasible to move forward.
And potentially, I would imagine, as with pedagogies, one could have a number of options that different institutions could apply within the assessment model. But we need to think about what those options are.
So how we stand?
Is it in this section that we would look at where enrollments happen and how and what time? For example, if students are just in the course but not doing the assessment, they would still need to be enrolled in some capacity, sometimes to be able to get into an LMS or whatever, depending on how the course is running. Is that enrollment happening where the courses have been in the institution, or is there some way that you want to also monitor, collect enrollments at an OEA uni level?
It's a very good question. Let me respond in terms of how I think it might work. Again, this is all open for discussion and refinement by all our anchor partners. A way I envisage this working is student X engages with some of our OER learning courses, right? At that point, there's no direct relationship with the conferring institution, the anchor partner. So I imagine there's independent study, there's e-tivities, there's peer-to-peer support that's happening, but there's no direct institutional engagement other than whatever we design for Academic Volunteers International. Okay. We don't know what that is yet. At some point in the future, that learner decide, I actually want to formalize my assessment and my credential, and then they put their hand up. And at that point, that individual then decides which one of the partners do I want to acquire my assessment and or credentialing services from. And at that point, then there's a legal relationship between the student and the institution. The OER University Network has nothing to do with that contractual relationship in a very, you know, sort of hard traditional sense. But what you can facilitate as a network is through open source technologies, some enrollment data that is beneficial to your system, so that we can pass on that data to you at the point you need it. For example, and it's just to give an illustration of how a system like that might work, where some learner, I mean, it's this old distance education problem, you know, in terms of reporting what your completions are. I mean, because the British Open University used to have, I don't know if they still have the model, but it's open registration, you register. But now, if that student flunks out within the first, you know, 2 weeks, or, you know, do you count that as an enrollment? Is that attrition? And so the British Open University developed their systems in the way that, you know, after the trial period, so to speak, that they then became sort of kind of legitimately enrolled students, if you will, from a statistics point of view. So kind of what we're doing is for the OER learning that's happening out there, anybody, anywhere, anytime, they are not legally students of the institution. But what we've done is we've put the programs out there in a structured way, using OER to the point that, and design the system in a way that the learners are pre-preparing themselves for a potential assessment model that we decide on.
Just make a brief comment about that. Again, I think the students aren't part of our sort of statistical count. In a traditional sense for government funding, because we're a government-funded institution. The relationship starts when they become assessed. When they say, I'd like to be assessed, then they'll have to be somehow integrated into our system. We run what we call a single unit for credit for continuing professional education, where people can actually do a course and gain credit for it without being in a program. So that would be a model that we could use where people, say, do one of our courses in the system and they would be recorded as having a single credit without being enrolled in the program. If they gathered enough credits from the system, a few from Wollongong, a few from Thompson Rivers, whatever, that's when they would be able to put it on the table and go to Athabasca, for example, and say, we've got this and we'd like an award. So all of that flexibility will have to emerge from this. But the way that it was originally conceived was to not complicate it by having to do meet government reporting guidelines for this. It's more in the continuing education space, as we call it.
So it's in this section that you want to discuss those things.
Yeah, and that's an issue in relation, just coming back to that we've got, you know, the styles of assessment, how we manage it, how we manage the credit transfer, or the credit management, the administration, leading into what does it cost to do all of that. So there's a lot of questions to be answered there. anyone game to take that on as a, unless you, you've got one person from Empire State, anyone would like to work, another brave person, or might I just put that on hold, but I think it is not as urgent in some respects, except how we might manage the assessment is urgent. How we manage the administration, I think we've got time to reflect on it. The last group, the fourth group, might get an indication of how many people haven't committed to a group yet. Quite a few. Yeah. Well, we'll have time to balance it out.
Roy, on this assessment, I don't see any that this is a commonality assessment. Are we going that way?
It's not.
I mean, I'll see that we do the assessment hourly. But I'm not opposed to it. I think that there might be possibilities for funding if we can get some standard assessment for OER courses. I think there's a real possibility. So I'm not opposed to it, but as I see it now, I mean, we're going to do our assessment our way, and everyone's going to do their assessment their way.
Yeah.
But I think we should also consider a unified approach to it, that if we can get somebody to help fund some really strong, robust, automated testing systems.
And just a quick response, Roy, and I agree entirely, because the strength of the model and how we're going to operationalize this is institutions have to use existing policy enablers that exist within the institution. But different institutions have different policy enablers. So, for example, Athabasca University has both the PLA and the challengeable credit policies. But other institutions may not have those enablers in that structure. But what we've got to consider when we're putting the OER in courses is how do we prepare the, if you will, the asynchronous assessment preparations that may be necessary for the model. So I don't think it's so much a unified approach, but if different institutions are going to use maybe a portfolio to assess that, then we've got to include it in the upfront design of the program. So this stage is really just that first take to get those issues on the table, because we have tacit knowledge in this room, because we've all got tacit knowledge of what is likely to work within our own institution. So let's not design something that's not going to work in our own institution with sufficient flexibility in the model. So that's, I think that's what it's about. Yeah, but I do take the point. I mean, if we could design some unified system that might work in some cases and it's funded, that's a benefit to the network as well. Yeah.
I personally don't like this term unified in the sense that it implies that we've got one system. I still like the idea, as Rory mentioned, we're going to do it our way, but we can benefit from other people's experience. For example, yesterday the model I put up of the portfolio within Moodle as part of our assessment process, there's no need to reinvent that wheel because it's based on a database module which we're happy to share if you're interested in using that. So it's looking at that. We haven't got challenge policies. We don't do a lot of PLA, but I'm happy to put that on the table in our institution if I've got a good model to follow and some experience. So if I look at it from a student's point of view, who may be, say, studying with a range of institutions and gain that experience, it would be, I think, useful for the student to have some experience of, you know, what the different interfaces are and how we manage that, because we lose students if the differences. I see that balance again, but not unification, not in the sense of common single approach. But did you want to?
No, I was just sort of reflecting on yesterday when the conversation around the courses and each institution contributing courses, I sort of queried that as to whether X institution contributing a course, is it the whole package? And I think there wasn't a full clarity on that around, you know, the course goes up. So I'm interested in that specific course, which means I kind of have to do it with this institution. And then this becomes just a consortium recognizing each other's credits, as opposed to, I think, what I'm hearing Wayne say this morning, which I agree with, which is the common materials that we're sharing that come from multiple sources, and then if not standardized, then at least the opportunity maybe to you know, display your excellence at numerous institutions depending on what they're asking you to contribute. So it may not be that we all accept e-portfolios, but you know, if someone's preparing that and then says, you know what, ideal world, I'd really like X college to look at it, or Y college, they would have that flexibility, other than as soon as I decide the course, I'm locked in, and it just becomes an articulation agreement, which I think is not as strong.
I have a different view. I mean, I think the articulation agreement is the strength of the model.
I think having it, I think absolutely having it as part of the model, but if it's the only element, then it really is just a consortium of like-minded schools that aren't really collaborating around other things like assessment. And
the other side, just putting on my accounting hat for a moment, by collaborating on this upfront piece, that's where we're going to save cost.
Yeah.
The moment we try and do this as a single institution, there's no benefit in the network.
Yeah.
Because it's simple math. It's about how many institutions, can we get 10 institutions together to actually agree and collaborate on ABC to save cost, because this must save cost, because if we don't save cost, there's kind of no point in doing it. But in a way that will fit within the existing system. And I think that's the advantage. And it's really about finding out what is that area of overlap between institution-based policy and what we can do within our institutions and this collaboration. What is the biggest overlap we can achieve? Because that's where we generate the biggest savings.
Yeah. And at the end of the day, I think we have to remember that when it comes to the piece on assessment, we as institutions are assessing the learning to give our credit.
You have to.
And it has to meet our expectations and our standards to get our credit. So however that happens, it's our institutional credit that would be given.
And that
everyone may
and that
have
is
a different
non-negotiable.
Approach. Everyone may have a different approach, and everyone may have a different way of looking at that. But if it's our credit, then it has to meet our standards, validated by us.
Yours, and that's non-negotiable.
I absolutely agree with that. I think it's more likely that if your institution is offering the course, that nicely ties it together, meets expectations, the pedagogy, the approach, the style of assessment fits in. I find it difficult to think, and maybe it's because we don't have a plan, that we assess somebody else's process in some way. I'm more comfortable, and USQ would be more comfortable, if we open up with our courses and we assess in our own way, but we can say use that credit to get a degree from Athabasca or Thompson Rivers or whatever. So the student experiences a number of institutional processes and qualities, and the cross-credit is the accreditation, is the articulation agreement. That's the glue that holds the thing together. It's the way that I think would work logistically and be the quickest way that we can move. But I think some of these issues will come out in the mix of the discussion, so having got a little bit of clarification, there's time for more. The last grouping for the morning that I was suggesting was to look at actually devising a project plan for the prototype in terms of timing. But I think to do that effectively, we need the evaluation work. We started on the context evaluation. We need the input evaluation if you're happy to work with the SID model, which is a framework which I think will work for this. So I'm suggesting that the evaluation of the context and input evaluations would feed the prototype plan and timing. So I'm suggesting in a way that 6, 7 and 8 sort of flow into another grouping. And it's really getting a more systematic collection of information about the context and the issues, the processes and the assets that we have and how we operate, and putting that into a plan. So that to me is going to be an ultimately critical part but we need the feeding from all of the other groups. So I'd like an indication of anybody's interested in the sort of project planning evaluation as a package. Okay, I'm interested in that. So we've got 3, 4, 5, 6. Okay, what I suggest that we do is just reflect that we have 4 groups unless there's a proposal to have another group.
Except the assessment group would only
have one. We've only had one.
And that's not to say that it's not important. I mean, we need flags and we need to get it sorted.
I'm a little confused about the assessment question too, because in number one it's talking about that sort of guaranteeing cross credit, which seems to me one of the subsets of the assessment question. So I wonder, I don't know whether the 5 plus Alan could split into sort of 2 groups of 3 and discuss 1, 2, and 4.
You know, maybe that's actually a good suggestion.
And that is a good suggestion. So we go back to 3 groups and Alan can join the first group. And it is part of an issue then. And I think some of these things we've got more time to sort out. So just reviewing that, the first group will look at point 1 and 2 around the assessment. So can we just have hands up for the first group? So we've got quite a large group there. So where would they meet?
I think the largest group should meet there.
Okay, so this group meets there, and what we would let you sort out your facilitator and reporter in sales. The second grouping is around the tutorial online student open support, academic volunteers and the like. So how many people have committed to that? So we've got a smaller group that's 1, 2, 3, 4. So Robin's office?
Yep.
Okay, we just, this is the volunteers.
Oh, okay, I'm the detective.
Okay. So that's in Robin's office. And then the last group is really looking at, you know, the context and input evaluations feeding into a project plan, which will ultimately take inputs from everywhere. So just get an indication of numbers in that group again. So that's the last group, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. So where are we?
Probably Phil's office on the Institute.
Okay, thanks, Rob.
Okay, just a brief word about the process. I think it takes time for us to get on the same wavelength, but I'm optimistic that if we have an open mind about this, we'll get something that we feel comfortable with, which is my model of whether it's going to succeed or not. You know, if we've got tensions and concerns, we need to get those out on the table and reach a point that the consensus, in inverted commas, is in a comfort zone, because we won't move our institutions into a common model. And what we really have got to do is say, will these principles work in our institutions? So that's as close as we get. I don't expect a total lack of cognitive dissonance, but just that we think we can make this work in a practical sense in our context.
And also, you know, from our perspective, here, this is kind of a first take at a draft plan. We're not going to be able to address everything, and we're not going to get it all right. And to be honest, this is the creative part of the process, which is in fact the hardest part of what we're trying to do. It's not easy. But the thing is, let's bring our tacit knowledge together and get a first draft of something which may work for the future, that can use as the basis for refinement as we move forward when we're working, you know, in a distributed fashion. So that's kind of the thinking behind this. What I also just want to add, what we've set up in the agenda, and again, to get to the agenda, you go to the Wiki Educator homepage. At the top, there's a link for the agenda, and you'll get to the agenda page. I've made a slight adaptation in the technology we're going to use for keeping track of what our thinking is. And you just scroll down to the agenda, and the different groups will be here. So group one, there will be an Etherpad document for you, and you'll have access to this. There was a bit of an issue around access to these documents here,
issues today.
I've got issues and access today, I'm afraid, and I didn't have them yesterday.
Oh, I'm using it. Do you need it there? Are you? Oh, that is
funny. That's all right, but just keep going now.
We'll figure it out. Because this shouldn't be an access issue. I'll try to figure it out. But basically, the idea is within any of these groupings, there might be a number of actions. This is logic model speed. A number of actions that we need to exercise or plan for within that model. And so what you would do is, what are the aims of that activity to achieve one of the objectives of that group? What are the short-term objectives? You know, just a little bit of structure. What kind of inputs would be needed in order to achieve that, right? And if the group has any draft, this is first draft, decision proposals that the bigger group needs to think about over a period of time. And of course, there could be more than one action for the particular work. And so you can make as many of these things as you would like. Makes sense. And of course, this is entirely open. You're free to adapt, modify, improve, and sell it if you like.
So in terms of the guideline, we're having a break at what time?
So we're having a tea break, and then after tea break, we still continue in the groups. We come back to the report session.
So,
what time is that, Rob?
For the tea break. And then we have another session before lunch.
At 12, yeah.
That should be fine. So, we've got the rest of the morning.
12:30 is lunch.
Yeah. So, we've got essentially the morning to start fleshing this out. Did you check on Bill's room?
Yeah, that's fine. Yeah.
So the big group were in here. The second group were in Robin's office. So the back and Till's office is ready for later.
Yeah, we'll check it. Yes.